Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet, Text 19. Vrajanyesha Ghora Rupa. Gora Sattva Nisheshvita. Pratiyata Vrajamneha. Stayam Sribi Sumadhyama. Vrajanyesha Ghora Rupa. Gora Sattva Nisheshvita. Pratiyata Vrajamneha. Stayam Sribi Sumadhyama. Vrajanyesha Ghora Rupa. Gora Sattva Nisheshvita. Pratiyata Vrajamneha. Stayam Sribi Sumadhyama. Vrajani, night. Esha, this. Gora Rupa, fearsome in appearance. Gora Sattva, by fearsome creatures. Nisheshvita, populated. Pratiyata, please return. Vrajam, to the coward village of Vraja. Not. Iha, here. Stayam, should stay. Stribi, women. Sumadhyama, O slender waisted girls. Translation purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. This night is quite frightening, and frightening creatures are lurking about. Return to Vraja, slender waisted girls. This is not a proper place for women. purport. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur has written the following charming commentary on this verse. The gopis thought, "Alas, alas, even after shattering our family responsibilities, our sobriety and our shame and enjoying us day after day, and after now dragging us here by the sound of his flute, he is asking us why we have come." As the gopis cast sidelong glances at one another, the Lord said, "If you try to tell me that you have come to get night-blooming flowers to use in the worship of God, and that it is these flowers that you are looking at with your sidelong glances, I will have to reject your excuse as unacceptable, since neither the time, place, nor person involved are appropriate." This is the Lord's meaning in the verse beginning Rajani. He might have said, "Even though there is abundant moonlight, this time of night is very fearsome because many snakes, scorpions, and other dangerous creatures too small for you to see are lying beneath the creepers' roots and twigs. Therefore, this time is unsuitable for gathering flowers. And not only the time, but also this place is unsuitable for you to gather flowers because at night terrible creatures such as tigers are abroad here. Therefore, you should go back to Braja." But the gopis may object, "Let us just rest for a few minutes and then we will go." And then the Lord might reply, "Women shouldn't remain in this kind of place. In other words, because of the time and place, it is wrong for persons like yourselves to stay here even for a moment." Furthermore, by the word Sumadhyama, O slender waisted ones, the Lord implied, "You are beautiful young girls and I am a beautiful young boy. Because you are all very chaste and I am a brahmachari, as confirmed by the words Krishna Brahmachari in the Shruti Gopal Tapani Upanishad, there should be no fault in our being in the same place. Nonetheless, the mind can never be trusted, neither yours nor my own." The Lord's inner eagerness thus hinted at is obvious if we read his words between the lines as follows. "If out of shyness you cannot tell the reason you've come, then don't speak. I already know it anyway, so just listen as I will tell it to you." Thus the Lord speaks the words beginning Rajani. The following statement by Krishna is based on an alternative meaning of the verse derived when the Sanskrit words are separated in a different way. The alternative separation, according to Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti, would be Rajani Asia Agora Rupa Agora Sattva Nisheshvita Pratiyati Rajam Naiha Steyam Stribi Samadhyama. So you can all see the difference. Hare Krishna. Fortunately, this will be explained to us. Through Srila Vishnu's commentary, Krishna now explains the meaning of this division of words. The pervasive moonshine has made this night appear not at all fearsome, and therefore this forest is populated by harmless creatures such as deer, agora sattvai, or else in animals such as tigers that are harmless because of Vrindavan's naturally nonviolent atmosphere. Consequently, this night should not frighten you. Or else Krishna may have meant, you should not be afraid by your own husbands and other relatives, because the night being populated by fearsome animals, they will not come near this place. Therefore, please do not go back to Vraja, na patiyata, but stay here in my company, iha steham. The gopis may ask the Lord, how are you staying here? The Lord answers, with women. But are you satisfied to keep just any women in your company? The Lord replies to this with the words, sumadhyama, meaning only women who are young and beautiful, who have slender waists, namely yourselves, should stay here with me and not others. Thus we can appreciate that Krishna's statements are full of considerate as well as neglectful sentiments. Krishna's words are certainly brilliant, because according to the rules of Sanskrit grammar, they may be understood in either of two opposite ways. In the first case, as translated above, Lord Krishna continues to tease the gopis by telling them the night is dangerous and inauspicious and that they should go home. But Krishna is simultaneously saying exactly the opposite, namely that there is absolutely no reason for the gopis to fear coming to the Lord, that the night is quite auspicious, and that the girls should under no circumstances go back home. Thus, Lord Krishna simultaneously teases and enchants the gopis with his words. Om Gyanatimlanda Shaganan Janasalakaya Shaksunitamina Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha. Panchakopatiru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitano Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Namo Namaha. So here Krishna is continuing to further speak to the gopis and to tease them. This is the second or third verse that he's spoken since he began speaking to them. First of all, of course, Krishna called all of the gopis to come by the playing of his flute. So after the gopis gave up everything, came running into the forest to meet with Krishna upon his entreating them to come, his compelling them to come by the playing of his flute, he's then suggesting that they should not have come. In yesterday's verse, he speaks quite formally about how are you doing today? It's very nice to see you. How is everything? Which got them somewhat confused. And now he's actually outright telling them that they shouldn't even be here. That this is a very dangerous place. You shouldn't come. You should not be alone here in the forest in the dead of night. So, of course, we have now a long explanation of this verse given by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that really that there's a second meaning to this verse, which has quite the opposite import. So Krishna is actually inviting, encouraging him to stay, depending upon which way you divide the Sanskrit words. Not being a Sanskrit scholar, I can't say too much more about this, except to accept the commentaries given to us by our acharyas. But we can understand that these secondary interpretations are very, very wonderful and very, very brilliant, and they're showing Krishna's superior intelligence and linguistic fluency. I think Nagaraj mentioned yesterday that some of the qualities that Krishna possesses have to do with his language abilities. He's also known as poetic. There's so many qualities like this that Krishna has. And of course, being full in all six opulences, including supreme intelligence, Krishna is able to compose these very, very wonderful verses. They're very, very interesting and very charming, and to see that even the Sanskrit construction is written in such a way that there can be two entirely different meanings, in fact, almost opposite meanings to the same verse. And we see this in different parts of the scriptures. I was trying to recall, I know that in many of these verses in the 10th canto, especially around the Rasa dance, there are these verses that have two different meanings depending upon how you interpret the Sanskrit. I also recall that there's quite a few like that in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In fact, I believe that Sanatana Goswami, who's written the verses, then he writes his own commentaries on the verses. He describes how there's two different meanings of the verses that he has written in several different verses in that work. And there are, of course, probably many other examples like this, which is part of the the wonderful quality of the Sanskrit language, that it can be written in such a way that gives such poetry and such intricacy to the interpretations and the understanding to it. So, at any rate, Krishna is, first of all, we can see exhibiting this this great ability to speak and to write so nicely and so charmingly. And it's also giving us a glimpse of Krishna's rasas. These rasas are actually very deep and very complex. Of course, they're in one level, they're very, very sweet, they're very lovely, charming, but they're also complicated. You can see that there are so many different things happening and so many different purposes, and Krishna's words have multiple meanings. They're very much multi-layered. So it certainly appears that this Madhurya rasa is probably the more complicated of all the rasas, because you have so many different things going on. You have intrigue, you have double meanings, you have separation and coming together, and all of these things happening. You don't see this so much in something like Dasya rasa, which is more straightforward, servitor relationship, even with the coward boys. Of course, there's a great variety of emotion, huge variety of different feelings, emotions, expressions, interactions, and behaviors exhibited. But, you know, sometimes the coward boys will be fearful. Sometimes they might, worry about Krishna, whether he is safe, or sometimes they may, depend upon Krishna. Sometimes they're very happy. But it seems a little more straightforward, doesn't it? I mean, it's basically, they're playing, the Gaur boys are playing with Krishna, they're having a good time. Sometimes demons come and there's some fear, but they depend upon Krishna. And of course, I'm sure it's very, very complex, and we can't begin to comprehend it. But at least to my, you know, probably not very advanced vision, it appears as though these relationships with the gopis in the Madhurya Rasa are very complicated. They're very, very, very complex. You know, there's, and in fact, all of these different, examples and different types of rasas and sub rasas and all of these things that are going on are explained elaborately in our different scriptures, you know, like the last chapters of the Nectar Devotion and things like this. So we see that, you know, it's there's a lot going on here. There are many meanings, there are many intricacies, and Krishna often works many different purposes when he does anything. For instance, in a couple of verses ago in Vishnachakravarti Thakur's commentary, he mentions that Krishna saying these words to the gopis achieved three different purposes that he had. I can't remember them all, but he wanted to, of course, he had purposes like he wanted to exhibit the depth of the gopis' love for him. So in other words, it seemed like he's doing a very simple, he's teasing them, they come, and he's telling them, oh, you shouldn't even be here. But he has several different purposes that he is doing. He wants to see the depth of their love. He wants to demonstrate it to the world that they actually are on this highest level of ecstasy. He also wants to experience that ecstasy himself, and he wants to increase their loving sentiments. So many things are going on in what might appear to be a simple, loving relationship between boys and girls. But of course, because this has to do with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can understand that these are the supreme loving affairs that are unequaled anywhere in the world. So we see this very great depth of emotion, and we see the highest expressions of love. So part of the reason for all of the intrigue, the complexity, the multifaceted aspects of these relationships is to make the loving relationship deeper and deeper. And that's really what Krishna is about. This is what the relationship with Krishna and the gopis is about. It's increasing almost unlimitedly the depth of the loving relationship. And so these relationships are, although there may be some complexity and there's even all kinds of different emotions, there might be envy, or not envy, but there may be disappointment, or there sometimes there is even some transcendental jealousy that's there. So many things are there, but yet these relationships are perfect. They're perfect because the loving relationship is ever increasing. So whatever is going on between Krishna's and the gopis, generally the purpose is to increase the loving exchange and the loving relationship, to make that relationship deeper. If there's separation, that separation causes greater attachment. If there's coming together, that then increases the loving relationship. Whether it's coming or going, or whether it's in union or in separation, it's always increasing in love. And this is, I was thinking about this, the ways that this contrasts with material relationships. It's and there's so many different levels that you could compare it on, how it's nothing at all like material relationships. Basically, all material relationships are flawed. And so, you know, we have this is almost one of the first principles that devotees understand, that we will not find real happiness, real love in the material world. And sometimes that seems, we've heard that many, many times, but we realize that it's absolutely true. That all relationships have some difficulty within them, and they do not give that kind of ultimate happiness that we see in spiritual relationship. I was thinking about if this whole thing that was going on right now that we're reading about in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this relationship with Krishna and the gopis, meeting these young girls, many of them who are married in the dead of the night and having this relationship, this would be an incredible soap opera, wouldn't it? If this was in the material world, there'd probably be divorces going on. There would be probably even people killing each other, and you know, all sorts of things would be happening. I mean, it would be a disaster. But yet, it's not. We never hear about that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We only hear that everybody's love is increasing, that everybody is happy, that everybody is satisfied in the relationship with Krishna. You know, how can one person satisfy hundreds, thousands, millions, even billions of living entities all simultaneously? This can never happen. In the material world, everyone would be fighting over that relationship. Everybody, there would be envy, there'd be jealousy. There'd be, you know, can you imagine? Think all these gopis are great friends with one another. They have their different camps, and, you know, there's some different things that are there that sort of increase the rasa. But basically, there's loving relationships amongst all of these residents of Vrindavan, all centered around Krishna. They're not envious of one another. They're not fighting one another. They're not all of these things going on. And to the degree that there ever is any of these other types of emotions, it's simply there to increase the rasa, to increase the loving relationships. So, of course, in the material world, everyone is looking for Radha and Krishna. Everyone is thinking that is going to be their relationship. When boys and girls fall in love and they come together, men and women come together, you know, they're thinking this is going to be Krishna, this is going to be Radharani. And of course, they are quite disappointed. We've been doing couples counseling for many, many years, and this is a theme that you often see, how people, they come together with great hopes and great expectations, and then there's disappointment down the road. And there's always going to be disappointment because we discover sooner or later that that partner is flawed. Or if we have family members, even if it's our, not just husband and wife, but it could be children, it could be friends, could be siblings, we find that they're flawed in some way. And they're not going to always be perfectly loving us. And they're not always going to be acting selflessly for our interests, strangely enough. Neither are we. So we find because of these inevitable material flaws in our human personalities and psyches, there's going to be difficulties. And we find then that people become disappointed if they expect this material level of love to continue, because it doesn't. Now, it's kind of interesting because, you know, we know about this, many of us probably have experienced this phenomenon of romantic love. When somebody falls in love with somebody, you know, and has this, you know, just surcharged with this enthusiasm and energy and endlessly thinking about the other person, it's kind of a perverted reflection of the way the gopis are always feeling towards Krishna. The difference is the gopis always feel this way towards Krishna eternally. They're always in the state of, you know, what we can only think of as that sort of highest passion of romantic love. But that romantic love in the material world ends very, very quickly. In fact, material scientists actually know about this. The psychologists have studied this phenomena, and they actually say that this romance period lasts between 1 month and 1 year, generally speaking. That's it. After a year, that's going to be gone. And that's because, believe it or not, it's related to hormones and chemicals in the brain, specifically oxytocin. So after your oxytocin levels diminish in the brain, the romantic feeling is going to diminish to some degree. So then what? People become disappointed, disillusioned. They look for somebody else so they can experience it again. Or they may, if they're more fortunate, more intelligent, they realize that there are deeper things in that relationship, and the relationship takes on a different form. They can still have a loving relationship, but it's not going to be of that intense romantic nature. So, of course, as they're saying, Christian gopis, they experience that highest level all the time, for eternity. Another great contrast between the material and the spiritual worlds. So, for devotees, how do we experience this? Of course, we understand that these material relationships do not give happiness. And even if they do give some happiness, of course, the end of the time of death, you know, our relationships are called fallible soldiers for a reason. Everybody fails us. If nothing else, they leave at the time of death. So we can't really rely so much on other living entities, other people in this material world, inhabiting material bodies and minds, for so many reasons. But at the same time, we realize that our devotee relationships are somewhat different. Relationships among devotees are not, by the very definition, by the very essence, they're not material. They are spiritual. Or at least they can be and should be. Now, the reality is that we usually have, you know, somewhat mixed motives. We have mixed relationships. We're often in a We're in a stage of mixed devotional service where there may still be some, you know, lingering desire for karma or jnana. So, you know, where you have this this mixed devotional service. So there also our relationships may also have some degrees of material consideration and also some spiritual aspects to them as well. But for the devotee, if they're really engaged in devotional service, then the devotional aspect or the service aspect becomes primary. And the other aspects are more or less duties that also need to be done, and they may also be there. And we may have certain material desires, material needs that are being taken care of as we are becoming purified in the process towards pure devotional service. So we often talk about, we think about how in all things that we do as devotees, particularly in our relationships, that Krishna must be in the center. That's what distinguishes something from material and spiritual. It's the presence or the absence of Krishna. If Krishna is there, it's spiritual. If Krishna's not there, it's material. Of course, that's simple to say, but how do we do it? How do we actually make relationships spiritual? Of course, and it is a natural thing, actually. Sometimes we think, well, are all relationships basically material and doomed to failure and we should just avoid them? Well, yes, there must be some detachment. This is a process of becoming detached from the material world, becoming detached from our sense of enjoyment, our sense of enjoying separately from Krishna. But we also know that the best way to achieve detachment is through attachment to Krishna. So Prabhupada usually emphasized that this is a positive, not a negative process. By becoming strongly attached to Krishna's service, then we naturally become detached. It's described that knowledge and detachment are concomitant processes results of devotional service. From bhakti, jnana, and vairagya naturally arise. So, but the bhakti is the important thing. There must be devotional service at the center. That's the common purpose. That's the common chord between all of our relationships in Krishna consciousness is service. I was thinking about devotees that I knew 30 years ago and served with and worked with. And, you know, there was just like definitely a strong relationship. And I haven't seen them for 30 years and I haven't, you know, it's interesting because it's not like we keep up or write and like that. And I've reflected on with some of these devotees, there wasn't a whole lot in common. You know, there wouldn't have been a material relationship particularly, or not somebody I would have naturally, you know, perhaps befriended or become close to. But because we were performing service together, there was that bond. There was that strong feeling. And if I saw that person again tomorrow, it would revive again. You know, you would immediately recognize, oh, this devotee, we've served together. You know, there's this commonality. Now, this is a very, very powerful thing. You know, because we are all part of Krishna's family. You know, just as we have natural affection to our family members, we're all part of Krishna's family. We're all part of Srila Prabhupada's family. So naturally, there's going to be affection amongst the devotees. That's a very natural thing. You know, but the strength and the power of that relationship, you know, comes through devotional service. You know, when we are actually all serving together, working together, involved in the preaching movement of this ISKCON movement, then there's naturally strong relationships. In the same way within the family, if Krishna is the center and there's devotional service, then naturally there's going to be strong bonds also formed. So that's a very important thing, that somehow or another, that part of whatever we do in any of our relationships, that there is at least some strong element of devotional service. Of course, we're all devotees, and our devotional service is going on, but sometimes there's a tendency that we sort of are doing our service side by side, perhaps. And, you know, this sometimes happens within families, that and within a couple, one person is doing their service, the other is doing their service, but when they come together, there's really not a lot of, you know, strong spiritual substance in relationship. And therefore, what there is of the relationship is more on the platform of duty or, you know, just taking care of material things. And that relationship will not be as strong, and it perhaps will not be as lasting. You know, because what is actually giving life to that relationship? What gives life to the relationship is service. So, of course, there's service to one another. Husband serves wife, wife serves the husband. And because we're all devotees serving Krishna, naturally that is there. That is one type of service. But for the Vaishnavas, we go beyond that. We also have our service to Krishna, our service to our spiritual master, our service to the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And somehow or another, we should all be involved in that. You know, we all need to take part of that, and even as within our families, within our relationships, there needs to be some core of that. There needs to be some sharing of that service that we have towards Guru and towards Krishna. And that makes the relationship stronger. It makes them very, very real. It makes them very spiritual. It makes it lasting. You know, and that's something that's starts to form a very, very common core strength in the relationship. And that will not be found through material activity. It will only really be there through shared spiritual activity and devotional service. So, anyway, this is something that we need to do as devotees to try to keep our relationships very strong and spiritual. We fully realize the faults, the frailties, and the shortcomings of all material relationships. We develop a certain detachment from material relationships, and that attachment shifts more and more towards Krishna and Krishna's service. At the same time, we try to keep our relationships on the spiritual platform as much as possible. You know, to make those relationships strong, spiritual relationships, where we can continue devotional service and service to the mission of Krishna consciousness. And I wanted to end with, I was trying to figure a segue on this. It's not a real good one, though. Kind of going in that direction in terms of service and the preaching mission. We have a wonderful opportunity right now to all contribute to that during this Christmas season. We have our Christmas marathon that we do. Some temples, of course, it's a very, very big thing where the whole temple is mobilized. And of course, it used to be that way 30, 40 years ago. Those older devotees will remember that we really made this a thing. Everybody went out and distributed books, and it was really quite wonderful. So many of Srila Prabhupada's books were distributed. So we don't really have those opportunities so much here in Alachua. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of, you know, we don't have a big city, and we don't have so many. But we do have some opportunities, and we have ways and venues that we can distribute books all through the year. So one thing that everybody can do, and especially all the grihastas, the householders who have a duty, of course, to help the service of the mission of Krishna consciousness, is we can all contribute towards buying books, sponsoring books that can be distributed, or take the books yourselves and distribute them if you have ways of doing that. But this is really a good opportunity to try to really to build this and to use this opportunity to kind of come together for this purpose. You know, in fact, it's a big drive all throughout North America. North America last year, our book distribution overall increased 28%. And so we were trying this year to do another 20%. We're a little bit short of that right now, or it's going to be very close whether we're going to make that goal. And so we're really, really urging all the temples to try to make this final push during the Christmas marathon towards book distribution. And it's another way of not only of helping the conditioned souls by distributing Srila Prabhupada's books that will immediately change their lives, but it's also a way for us to work together, to come together, and to serve together in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, that's my my paid political announcement for the day. And I think we'll end at that point. Are there any other thoughts, comments, questions on this? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see a Shri Prabhupada.
You were mentioning how the psychologists, material scientists have analyzed the that romance, that romantic kind,
yes,
of love. Have they done any research on, like, separation, but, you know, how that affects? I mean, because when I went to college...
The Vipralamba effect.
Yeah. Because I went to college and I got my room in the dorm, and there was a sign someone posted, short absence quickens love, long absence kills it. So, I mean, I don't know if there's been any scientific proof of...
I don't know. There probably has been. I'm not aware of it or haven't seen it. But I think it would depend upon the stage of that person, because obviously if that is one of the symptoms of the romantic love stage, is that longing, which actually is kind of that idea of separation, that you say separation makes the heart grow fonder or something, isn't that it? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So there's some truth to that. Of course, you know, sometimes later, after a relationship is developed every few years, sometimes separation is a good thing too. Or can work that way. It can work either way, yeah.
In the Vedic system, I mean, love's got nothing to do with it at all, does it? I mean, the partners never even see themselves before the marriage. And so love is something that comes through the relationship itself, I presume it's a three-way, with Krishna as sort of three people in the I suppose, as I would understand it. But so it's a completely different... And I think in most colored cultures, this, the West, we've got this strange idea of romantic love. This came out of the Middle Ages or something, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
So
there's no mention in history until the Middle Ages of romantic love in any culture, and it sort of arose, I think, through these romantic songs and ballads and things like that. And it also, strangely, it was usually not related to marriage, even for many hundreds of years. In fact, it's a very, very recent phenomenon, a Western phenomenon, that marriage and romantic love are actually equated. You know, it's really not that common in most cultures. And I mean, most cultures assume there were practical reasons for marriage, and then hopefully affection and love would grow and develop, through the relationship over years. And as we can see how well, though, it's worked in America, which absolutely, worships this idea of romantic love in all of our movies and novels and songs and everything. You know, we have one of the highest divorce rates in the world. So, yeah, does it? You can see how well it's worked out. Prime Governor, and then we'll get.
Thank you. It was a very nice class. You mentioned in the middle or in the beginning, there's a three-part process. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes. I thought it was very fascinating. If that is focus, you mentioned that first one was. That Lord Krishna was acting indifferent in the situation of their finally coming together. If somebody acts completely opposite, generally it diminishes or reduces the love within the opposite partner or beloved. But here you have mentioned that rather it's increased instead of decreasing their love. This is like a very phenomenon generally in the West, or even in India, but generally less divorce. But still, this is like a most, I thought it was very fascinating that Krishna was acting indifferent in his dialogue, that he has no interest in there, even though he called through flute. But you mentioned that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes that it was proving that Gopi's love rather increased instead of going away or blaming him. And then another one point, he said that Krishna wanted to establish that his sulkiness, demanding, made the gopis submissive. And then as a result, so much emotion came out that it burst out to the world that actually how much love they had for him. So that reminded me in 1968, Srila Prabhupada's discussion in San Francisco with Upendra Prabhu, that Upendra Prabhu asked Prabhupada that if we have a relationship with God as a father and son, how is that we have to become a lover? So Prabhupada was putting a pause in his explanation. He says, well, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact sentence, but it's in the Veda base. And Prabhupada says, all the relations are very harmonious, very nice. But if you feel you have a loving relationship as a lover, in perfection of your devotional service, it will mature and manifest. And then Prabhupada put in pause. He said, all the relationships are perfect. But if you feel you have a relationship, then he again repeated, if you feel you have a relationship as a lover, Then originally it is positioned. I took it like a Sanskrit sloka, that word. Originally Prabhupada said it is positioned. That means constitutionally somebody has that, like gopis, they have a pure in madhurja ras, which will rather increase day by day, never will decrease. That was very nice.
Right, thank you. Rangabadi?
It's such a, you know, like a difficult subject to really even think about, but of all the things that Krishna could have done, he uses this concept of the gopis leaving their families and their children and milk boiling and their husbands and go to the dead of night. And is there like a correlation between that and those of us that have come to the material world to enjoy? And we know that the highest enjoyment is through affairs and loving relationships with the opposite sex. So in this pastime that Krishna does, it's considered the highest. And yet in the material world, if you were to do those, when men or women leave their partners, this is considered sinful in some ways, without getting into the whole why that happens. So is there some connection between Krishna showing that even you have a perfect relationship with your family, as I'm sure those gopis did, that you can drop and just leave everything because I'm the highest, you know, I go above all of that. Krishna saying, I go above all of that. So is there a connection between that and showing us in the material world that even though you have a relationship, it might be good, it might be very good, but it doesn't matter because ultimately it goes away and you're left, you know, you're by yourself as a soul that travels throughout all these millions of lifetimes and all that. Is there some sort of correlation between, is that like a way of Krishna teaching us that?
Well, I'm not sure. I think I understand what you're saying. In terms of this sort of like metaphorical, not, of course, it's absolute in one sense, but is it an example or metaphor towards relationships with the material world? I'm not sure. Now, I know that Prabhupada has often mentioned that what seems, you know, what may be the, you know, lowest in the material world is highest in the material world. So we have that perverted reflection idea. And that's obviously very strong here. This is kind of like the epitome of that idea of the perverted reflection, where you have something which would, as you said, consider to be very abominable and low. And that's why there's so much misunderstanding often of Krishna's pastimes. People say, how can you worship someone who does these kind of things? But of course, in the spiritual sense, it is the highest. And one of the reasons it is the highest is because the gopis risked everything. You know, what they did, we read a few verses ago in some of the purports that this would be considered to be, you know, one of the, you know, in this cult, in the culture, I don't know what we call the cultural aspect of Vrindavan, but, you know, whatever they were living within, whatever the norms and values there, this would have been considered to be terrible. You know, the worst thing for a young woman to do, either a young unmarried woman or a married woman, either way. I mean, the married woman's even worse, of course. So it's like, yes, there is this contrast. There's this contrast between the spiritual and the material. You know, and there's so many, like I said, it's so multifaceted. I mean, it's showing that the gopis, their highest love, that it was so great, their attraction for him, that they would give up all of this. This was more important than their reputation, than everything, their families. Whether this is showing us that in the material world all of these relationships are fallible and should be left, I'm not sure whether that's, you know, an expressed purpose, but I think we could understand that. That's a meaning or a purpose that we could gain from this. Because certainly the idea that Krishna is the ultimate object of our love is very much something we learn from Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto. In other words, that it is the ultimate object and that nothing else is going to really satisfy us. You know, it's not even a question of, well, what were all the things wrong with the... I mean, I was expressing there's so many problems with material relationships, but ultimately, the real problem with material relationships is that they're not with Krishna, right? In other words, ultimately, we are meant to love Krishna. We are meant to be in relationship with Krishna. Now, it's not Krishna and us alone. You know, it's not impersonal. There's a whole supporting cast. There's so many other people. There's relationships amongst the devotees, you know, and all of that. But ultimately, no, we're not going to be happy unless we have reestablished that constitutional position, the relationship with Krishna. So I guess all of that is sort of telling us that. I don't know if I actually know exactly the answer to your specific question. Is that all right? Or okay. We should, okay, quick.
Just very nice. Srila Prabhupada, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a verse, I believe in Adi 4. Amito na jane gopigan, duhar rupe gune duhar nitya hare man. In the purport, Prabhupada writes that pure love should be cannot be controlled, or and there cannot be any hindrance and no obstacle. And I was contemplating on it because it's a simple English, but it was very hidden. Because then the translation of that verse, Prabhupada, that Lord Krishna expressing that through Yoga Maya, he will create an atmosphere where the gopis will not know that they are actually eternal, internal potency of the Lord. And Krishna also will be covered by Yogamaya, where he will not know he is Supreme God and they belongs to him. So, but by the quality and attraction, this pastime will take place. And in the purport also Prabhupada mentioned that how that obstacle put by the Yogamaya, like for an example, they have a husband and children. Actually, it is not like a harmful husband and children. It's created by Yogamaya just to increase their conception. Mm-hmm. They want more than before. Mm-hmm. But it is not like a neglecting of a mundane, you know, realm, like, oh, we are condemning. This is not true. Actually, this is just a form. They are visible just for them to get that idea that they will break anything to meet Krishna. Just for that the forms are created, but it's not something harmful. It was a very nice purport.
Isn't it said even the husbands are almost like...
A duplicate.
Almost like they're duplicates or illusionary or something.
There's a duplicate.
Right?
Yeah. Prabhupada put that verse, Maya Kalpita Tatrikasti. Duplicate verse. That verse is there also.
Right. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.